to minute 106 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Aaron, the host of Out Now with Aaron and Abe, and a writer for We Live Entertainment. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Ready to talk about The Great Escape for an entire week with you, if you're willing to, you know, if you're willing to end it and come back every day.
I mean, if Steve McQueen can spend 20 days in solitary, I can handle this, I think.
Actually, we don't know how many days he spends in solitary. That's one of the things that we're going to discuss today.
Oh, okay.
So, minute 106 begins with Hiltz being let out of the cooler once again. I think this is his third stint that we've seen in the movie, and goes all the way till we see a guard turning on the spotlight. So, as we discussed last week, Hiltz is getting ready to get out of prison for the umpteenth time, and, you know, you have the guards come, and they you know, the same guard as always. You have Strachwitz standing there this time also to let him out. You know, he's pretty happy. You know, he's one of the things that I love about seeing Steve McQueen in this movie is that you never see him upset, disappointed, you know, pissed off, nothing. You know, he's always jolly.
It's funny because I tend to think of that with Steve McQueen, like, when is he happy in movies? Because it doesn't seem like very often. He's certainly cool. I'm not discounting the fact that he's a cool character. But, like, I feel like the movies I associated him with more generally are ones where he seems, like, annoyed or very focused or even angry. Where this movie, this and, like, maybe Magnificent Seven, he just seems like he's having a good time. And yeah, this is, like, the worst situation he could be in. He's in a German prison camp compared to being like, I'm in a cool heist with my friends. This is like, I'm stuck in solitary confinement. All I have is a baseball to comfort me and Ives. Like, that's it.
Well, I guess the baseball does comfort him quite a lot. I think that's part of the idea here is that, you know, he's happy about being able to take his baseball with him into the cooler.
He's very zen. He's very zen about it, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And it's just interesting looking at him. I mean, obviously everyone knows that he's the cooler king, and that's his specialty in the, you know, in the movie and stuff like that. But he, as you mentioned, he acts so cool in the whole thing. I love the double play on the word cool, because he's the cooler king because of the cooler, but he's also acts cool the whole time. You know, he's like the Jimmy Dean of Stalag Luft 3. The way that you know, and for him it doesn't faze him at all. He's able to do the time. You know, as a lot of other prison movies talk about, you know, that the solitary time is the hardest time, but he doesn't play it that way. You know, he plays it that this is my downtime. This is the time where I get to play with my baseball, you know.
He's numb to it at this point. Like, it's a zen thing that he's got going for sure, but he's also just, given that he's an escape artist, it would seem at this point, it's just like, yeah, it comes with the territory. You get caught every now and then. You gotta wait it out.
What do you mean every now and then? He gets caught every time. You know, he likes spending time in the cooler. I mean, a few weeks ago we discussed the fact that he and Goff were admiring the large cooler that they had here, meaning they're expecting a lot of people to be spending time there. You know, Steve McQueen has the most time of everyone in this timeshare. You know,
yeah,
there's no question about that.
He really won. He really won that one.
Yeah, I mean, some people have also, I've heard and read that people talk about the fact that you know, his smug attitude whenever he walks out of or walks in or out of the cooler is part of the whole idea of showing, you know, that you know, I've compared this a lot to parts of Shawshank, but the idea that you know, there are ways of doing easy time, you know, if you have the right mindset, and that's the way his character is, because, you know, we've seen when he and Ives are both thrown in, we see that he just goes in, okay, I'm back in, and Ives every single time, you see that it just gets worse and worse for him each time.
It's cracking under the pressure of it, yeah.
And he doesn't crack at all. For him, it's, okay, throw me in the cooler, I'll be fine. You know, give me 10 days, 15 days, 20 days, 30 days, whatever it is, you know, I'll be fine. I mean, obviously, you know, he this time that, that he went in, he's doing it, he did it on purpose. You know, he went out to go, you know, scan out what's going on around the town, or around the local town of Zagin, whatever, however you want to pronounce that. And, you know, he did this on purpose. One of the things that they never mention is how long is he in there for? You know, is he in there for 10 days? Is he in there for 20 days? Is he in there for 30 days? You'd think that someone who they're going to keep capturing, they're going to up his time every single time, unless they just realize that it doesn't faze him anyway, so it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And, like, even the movie opens with the whole, like, the timeline's been compressed and everything to fit for, you know, it justifies why it might, you know, why it's only a 3-hour movie and not a 3-month miniseries. So, yeah, I don't deny, yeah, it certainly, the amount of time is not, that just all the more makes him a cool customer. Like, Tim Robbins wishes he could be as cool as Steve McQueen when it comes to people that go to Costco Solitary and are acting smug about it. And I was trying to think of, like, are there other actors that could have, like, done, like, he seems like such the ideal candidate for this part specifically. Like, there's not that there's not cool actors from the 60s that could have also occupied this role. Like, Paul Newman comes to mind. But there's just something
Paul
like
Newman
McQueen
could have been able to do this. Because, again, you got him. He did Cool and Luke. And, you know, it is a prison movie. It's
He did that. And, like, and they co-starred in Towering Inferno together. It's like, I mean, there's, I'm trying to, like, other actors that have the kind of swagger of Steve McQueen, yeah, there's not many. He's maybe the closest at that time, but also Steve McQueen just has a grittiness to him that I think really adds to it as well, where you can believe him in this part, this guy that's, you know, he's a cool customer, but he's also, you know, he's a guy that's seen some
Tally-ho.
Like that's kind of what it feels like for a Steve McQueen type to be, you know, the cooler king, the guy that can do this and, you know, not break a sweat about it.
Right. I mean, you brought it up. Who would you, in modern actors, who do you think would be able to pull off something like this?
Modern actors, like the American, I don't know, like Josh Brolin, maybe could do something like this. Mads Mikkelsen came to mind, honestly, actually, as far as a guy that's like, he's a cool guy, he's got some grit to him, if he wants to have it, it'd be, and then you'd have, because now I'm thinking, like, what would be the setting for this? I guess, would you just be doing a World War II movie again, but just a modern cast, right? Or would it be some other right situation?
I mean, personally, I'm not a fan of remakes and stuff like that, so I wouldn't really, you know, I try to stay away from
saying,
recasting, because this movie is cast spectacularly, there's no question about
it. Exactly.
But the actor that comes to mind to me, that modern actor that might have been able to do this type of role as well, is maybe George Clooney.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
that's what hits me, because of the coolness factor. You know, that he, you know, the way that he plays his roles, I can see it. It's a little bit of a stretch, I know that, but again,
no, I mean,
no one's
certainly
it.
like a post from Dusk Till Dawn Clooney. I could see that working really well. Just like, you know, a slightly younger, like Out of Sight Clooney, a movie where he escaped from jail. that's one where I can see that working.
Well, in the trunk of a car, but still, you know. I agree with you on that. So I think Clooney 2021 would not do as well as Clooney 90s.
Yeah, 2021, you know, Clooney, he'd be
send Doug Ross into the role.
Exactly.
You know. Right, so that we basically only get a few seconds of this whole thing where he leaves the prison itself, and then the scene cuts to we see Mac sitting on a stoop, you know, smoking a cigarette, reading a book, which, as we all know, is just a cover. And then it cuts to seeing Hilt actually enter the compound. Now, I just find it interesting because you see Strachwitz standing in front of him, so that, you know, we missed something here. There's, you know, the idea of having him stand by the gate, and then Strachwitz comes in, because Strachwitz is just standing there, even though he was just next to him a few seconds ago. Depends on how they cut it or whatever, maybe, you know, when they filmed it. It might be a little bit of a continuity error, but it's still a little bit believable. And then he walks across the compound playing with his baseball, meaning that no matter how many days he was there, it still didn't bother him to be able to continue playing with his baseball. I guess it's a little bit of, he's able to play with the baseball in a diverse way. He doesn't have to throw it against the wall. You know, he's just, you know, throwing it from one hand into the
glove. And it's just, it's open like defiance that, as well, as far as just, you know, you want to break us and you're not going to break us. We're here and we're going to, you know, we're going to hold on to the exact attitude that we'd have if we weren't here.
And I love the way that he just very simply signals Mac, you know, as he's walking by. And he comes over to Mac, you know, they greet one another, and then he says, all right, when? You know, it's like, this is what I'm here for. You've been waiting for me to get out of prison? And the answer is, okay, we're going out tonight. And we thought they'd never let you out. Now, that's a very interesting comment to say. We thought they'd never let you out. I mean, Mac's in charge of intelligence. They know what's going on, even though, you know, when we discussed this a few months ago, they weren't really sure about what Ives and Hiltz were planning. Mm-hmm. They knew that something was being planned, but they weren't sure exactly what was being planned. And that was a big question that we asked back then. How did, you know, how was intelligence able to get that information? Because that's not information you're going to get from a guard. In this case, you know, the idea that we thought they'd never let you out. So, wait a second. They must know how long he's supposed to be in there for. You know, they're able to get that information. So is the question that, you know, we didn't think that they were going to let you out for another week or so, or is it we didn't know what time today they're going to let you out? You know, what do you think about that?
Probably more the former.
No, because if they're going out tonight, you know, they're ready to break out tonight. So if they're ready to break out tonight, they must know that he was supposed to get out today. Because if he's getting out next week, that's not going to be good.
Well, just the way, I mean, the way you're asking, the way they're phrasing it, I'm trying to think of the scene specifically. As far as, like, you know, the context that applies. Yeah, given how resourceful they are in getting the information they need to, maybe probably makes more sense as far as just approximately when he's going to be able to get out there. But even then, just them understanding that he's in this precarious situation where he's constantly getting, you know, caught and whatnot. And now it's like, well, we have a set schedule on what we want to do. And when is one of our team going to be, like, available for us? Yeah. See.
Right. No, but it's not. He's an integral part of the team because they need him to be able to find out about, you know, when, how far the train station is and all that stuff, which is pretty, I wouldn't necessarily leave that for the last minute if I was planning.
No, I mean, at this point, they basically have all this, all the information that they're happy to leave him behind or whatnot, but aren't they pretty much set as far as the things that the information they have from him?
No, how would they have gotten the information? The idea now is they're going to get the information.
I'm screwing up when he's in versus when he's able to communicate with them. You're right.
Right. No, again, if he was able to send out notes beforehand and stuff like that, then you're right. They don't need him. You know, and then Mac basically says, well, okay, so let's get at it. That's what Hilt says. And then Mac says, all right, Roger's already waiting for you. Bartlett's waiting for you. And then he goes, I'll be there. What do you mean, I'll be there? He's waiting for you. I mean, when you go into that much detail about what's going on, it just doesn't make sense. For this conversation is just very strange. You know, he's waiting for you. Okay, I'll be there. Not, okay, I'll go there right now. It makes it sound as if, you know, show up at 5 o'clock. Okay, I'll be there. Not, he's waiting for you.
That's the kind of thing where this is like a 3-hour movie as it is, and I can only imagine that. Yeah, and you already talked about, like, you know, the one guy waiting in a spot where it seems like, why is it, like, there could be, like, a, you know, so much more that they shot and they still had to, you know, compress it down to make this movie just, you know, flow as narratively well as it does.
Which it does.
For a 3-hour movie, I think this movie's pretty expertly paced.
Yes.
So
no question about that.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's maybe more, like, you know, shoe leather kind of details as far as, like, really fleshing out exactly what everybody means at all times. But it's like, do we really need that? Can we just cut to the chase at some of these points?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just, I mean, even when looking at the script, the original script, I mean, it's all, this is a very choppy scene. I agree with you. It makes sense to do it the way this is because you get the gist of what they're talking about.
Mm.
But again, when you're looking at
it minute by minute, I can understand.
Minute by minute. Yeah. So it just, at this point, it makes less sense because it's as if they're reading each other's minds. You know, he's saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. And so, I already know what we're going to be doing. And all right, we're going to move on from there.
That's also shorthand. You know, they've been together for presumably like a year, it's something like that, maybe.
Right. No, the timeline in the movie is that they've been together about 3 or 4 months.
Okay. Even that.
The timeline of the real escape was a year.
That's what that...
they all got to the camp in March 43 and broke out in March 44.
My mind was thinking, yeah, the year.
Here No, that's fine. So here it's a little, they never mention what year it is. So it could be either 43 or 44. My assumption is it's meant to be 44. You know, I could be wrong about that. So basically they truncate the whole thing because they get there around March 44 and then the breakout is in August. So it's 4 or 5 months total, something like that. Basically, Hiltz walks off after this little conversation between the two of them. And it's just really funny because he walks off, and then what does Mac do? He looks at his watch. So, and also, it doesn't make much sense. It's like, because they didn't say, all right, we're going to meet in 2 hours. We're going to meet in 30 minutes. One of the things that I've joked about with a lot of people over the course of this is that, you know, Hiltz doesn't really have a room or a bed because his room and bed are in the cooler. You know, so, like, where's he going now? Yeah.
Lean against a wall. Somewhere.
Exactly. He's going to play ball against a different wall, you know.
I mean, he checks his watch. Like, I check my watch at random times for things, even though I already know well, or just for things that don't even make sense. Like, I'll check my watch to see what year it is. Like, my watch doesn't tell me what year it is. It's just a habit.
It doesn't? Mine does.
Well, good for you.
Well, sometimes it's hard to remember if it's 2020 or 2021 or, you know, or 2050, who knows?
Yeah, either way, though, my watch will not tell me that when I look at it, but I will do it at random sometimes. Be like, what, it's 2021.
No, sometimes I'll look at my watch, and then I'll look away, and then I'll forget what time it was.
Yeah, there you go.
I forget that I just looked at my watch, and then I got to look back at my watch. You're right. So, yeah, that does happen here, too. And then Matt goes into the barracks, and then they have a very interesting shot of the camp in darkness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nighttime. The different spotlights, you see two guards moving around. The music is great in this scene because it's very eerie night music. You know, that's one of the things I love about the soundtrack of this entire movie is that there's so many different keys that they use to play the music. Sometimes it's upbeat, sometimes it's a lot more eerie. It depends on what's going on and stuff like that. And they do that, you know, Leonard Bernstein did a great job with the music here. And at this point, you know, they're showing the outside of the camp, or they're showing the camp from the outside and in darkness. And there's just like eerie music about something sinister is about to happen. Even though anyone who's seen this knows that, you know, this movie isn't that sinister. I wouldn't necessarily use that word for it. But they linger a little... They linger for about 20 seconds on showing us what's going on. You know, you see a guard in a guard tower. You see another guard walking by. Just to, I guess, give us more of a sense of danger as to what's going on, you know,
yeah, in the middle of the night. They want the stakes to seem, you know, for a movie that's pretty gung-ho and its adventure qualities, like, it does, you know, it wants to make you aware that, you know, there are real stakes here. There are people there that are going, you know, if the death of Ives didn't convince you already, like, people are going to shoot you if you try to do this. And they want to make sure that threat is still alive, especially as we, you know, all this week of shows is all about the build up to the giant finale of this whole thing. So it's like, yeah, remember, there are Nazis here and they're going to shoot you if you try to escape. So.
Correct. You know, the guard in the tower turns on the spotlight, and that pretty much ends this minute. So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
Not specifically. This is the most Steve McQueen focused episode of the week for me, I think. So, nothing to complain about there. But, you know, I enjoy seeing Steve McQueen in the movie.
Did you want to say something else about Steve McQueen about the movie? Since we won't visit him again during this week.
Nothing that's not going to take us onto like a 10-minute long tangent about best motorcycle scenes of all time. No, he's just, like I said, he's a cool customer, and I really like what he does here. I think, you know, with an ensemble cast where so many characters stand out for different reasons, he brings the, you know, not just like that big star power, but just the kind of effortless cool of screen presence that he just naturally seems to have whenever he's on screen. You're like, oh, cool, Hiltz is here. Like, it's just like fun to watch. It's fun to just see him involved in all of this.
Exactly. All right. So you want to come back in tomorrow to continue discussing this buildup?
Yeah, I'm out the door, but I'll come back in.
All right. No problem. So why don't you tell everyone how they can get in touch with you?
You can find me doing a number of things. I host a podcast, Out Now with Aaron and Abe. My friend Abe and I talk about the weekly movie releases. I write for We Live Entertainment. All my movie reviews end up over there. I also write Blu-ray reviews for WhySoBlue.com, and I do the occasional article over at Variety. And I'm on Twitter at AaronsPS4.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe at any podcatcher that you might be using to listen to the show. You can visit our Facebook group, The Cooler. You can visit our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And our Twitter handle is greatescapemxm. So, until tomorrow, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!